history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories that really need to be told, and maybe more importantly, some stories that need to be heard by the rest of us. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're always entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And you know, every once in a while, if I'm out talking to some of you listeners, somebody says, "How come you never have women on the show?" And I said, well, you didn't hear the right episodes. But today we are very blessed to have an incredible woman with us. She's going to be 95 later this year. You wouldn't believe it if you met her. Lila Morrison of Windsor, Colorado, but originally Blue Ridge, Georgia. What was it like growing up in Blue Ridge, Georgia?
Well, at that time, it was very nice. A small town right on the Tennessee-North Carolina line. It was one of those little towns where everybody knew everybody. Just took it for granted that everything was good, everything was well, and we all seemed very happy.
The world has changed a lot in your 95 years, hasn't it?
Right.
And it's changed a lot for women.
Yes, it has.
And women today maybe don't realize what had to happen for some of the opportunities that are there. Growing up for you, did you just know you were going to be a Southern Belle? Was that, was that the image, the ideal, the aim for you?
Well, kind of. People would tease you a little. But as I was growing up, I wanted to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I was little, the youngest in seven children. And my mother passed away before I remember. And I just always wanted to be a nurse so badly, and that was uppermost in my mind, even as a little girl going to grade school.
What do you think that came from? Was it because you'd lost your mother, or?
I don't know, because we didn't have a lot of medical people in my mm-hmm. family. It's just something I must have been born with. Of course, I don't think I really realized how handicapped it was for me not having a mother. And my dad was older. He was in his 50s when I was born.
Mm.
But I remember the Depression, and I know a lot of people were hungry and really having a tough time. A man would work for a dollar a day and be thankful. But I was fortunate in that my dad had a business. He had a hardware and a furniture store in this small town, and he was also a mortician. It was a kind of a double building, and they had the caskets and did all the embalming and whatnot in one side, and then the other side was hardware and furniture.
Interesting way to grow up.
Yes.
So you had this idea about nursing.
Yes.
And you did it. You went to nursing school.
Yes, over in Chattanooga, Tennessee. See, we were just 10 miles from the Tennessee line.
And were you in nursing school when Pearl Harbor happened?
Yes.
What do you remember about that day, December 7, 1941?
I remember it very well. And in the first place, I couldn't believe it. It just seemed, you know, U.S. at war? No, that couldn't be us. But as the days went by, I began to realize how that was going to change my life as a nurse. And it did.
You began to realize that the Army was going to need nurses?
All the military.
But what made you think you were the one who was cut out for that?
Well, I was young, 22 years old. You couldn't belong to any of the military unless you had your RN.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to graduate. Then, of course, you have to pass your state board before you get your RN. I graduated in June of 43, and they didn't give the boards till August. So after that, we were very short here in the States, too.
Of nurses?
Yes, very short. But I thought, well, here I am, 22, my mother and dad both gone.
Because your father died while you were in nursing school,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did. I thought, well, I can go so much easier than maybe married girls that were married nurses. So we had a man that came to our school and said, if you girls don't volunteer, we're going to have to draft you. And that would be a disgrace to the nursing profession. So we fell for it, several of us. Right now I'm a little wiser, but I'm not sorry.
Was it at all intimidating or imposing to think about this idea? Because, I mean, nursing is a difficult profession. You have to have a strong constitution to work in any hospital or any situation like that.
Yes.
But being a nurse on the front lines of a war is a completely different story. Do you think you grasped that at the time?
No. I don't see how anybody can grasp it until they've been there and witnessed it.
And was there also a motivation that, you know, if you did put one of those uniforms on, you're going to be around a lot of soldiers and one of them might be a good husband for you?
No, I never thought of marriage. I really didn't. In fact, I didn't want to get married.
Well, we're going to hear about that. It took a persistent soldier to win your hand in marriage. How about getting used to military life? How did that all unfold?
It was different, absolutely. But it came very easy for me. Well, see, being the youngest, I had all my siblings, four brothers, and they all told me what to do as I was growing up. So it came easy.
Were your brothers all in the war?
Two of them were.
So you enlisted in the Army Air Corps?
Yes, I did. We had heard, the girls at school had heard, that the Air Corps was a lot better than just the Army. So we all signed up for that. And by the way, we came to Denver for our basic training.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. It was orders, and you just followed the orders. And I guess I was used to that growing up in the family. I liked it. We finished our basic training in Denver, and then they told us what we'd do. So I was stationed down at Keesler Field, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
That's right on the Gulf. It's still there,
sure.
Still functioning. In fact, my grandson is in the Air Corps Reserve now, and he had to go down there to school.
So this military life, it gave you a view of the country. You went here to Colorado, where you are now, California. You just mentioned Mississippi. And I guess it's a real good thing you ended up in Texas, huh?
Well, we were sent there because we were transferred to the ground forces. I had ideas of being a flight nurse.
Uh-huh.
But this was in 43, 44, and the war was progressing. You know, we were going forward most of the time in Europe. Of course, we had no idea where we'd be going. But they sent us to Camp Bowie, Texas. That's right, Brownwood, Texas, right in the middle. Had basic training, went on bivouac. Then we were put on a train. We had no idea where we were going, east or west. But after we got out of the south, we were beginning to veer to the east, and we figured it would be ETO, European Theater.
Yeah, getting sent overseas.
Yes.
Well, and I don't want to overstate it or dwell on it too long here, but you said something there. So you had enlisted in the Army Air Corps. You had ideas of being a flight nurse. You had what you thought was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say, sorry, we don't need people like that. We need people on the ground, on the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something that disappointed you at the time?
No, not too much.
No big deal.
No. See, I didn't know what outfit I'd be with. They didn't tell us much at all. Just
mm-hmm.
We were going on a troop train. I really didn't know what outfit or how I'd be serving till after we got to Europe.
What was your motivation? Why did you want to do this?
Well, like I say, I was young. I figured I could do it better than some of the older nurses. Some of them had come up through Africa and Italy, and they almost had battle fatigue. That's what we called it back then.
There's something else I think we need to understand here, because mm-hmm. when they sent you to Texas, even though this is a big change of plans for you,
mm-hmm.
I know you look back now and you're pretty thankful that you were sent to Texas, because you met somebody there
mm-hmm.
who would become a you know, pretty significant part of your life.
Very well.
Tell me that story. What happened?
Well, you know, there's always a shortage of women, I guess, around the camp. Camp Bowie was a big camp. The second night, we arrived there at night and went it was kind of late. We hadn't had dinner. So we went to the officers' club to have dinner. We met some other nurses, and they say, oh, you're just arriving here. Would you like to go to a dance tomorrow night? One of the outfits is having a dance out at the Brownwood Country Club, and we need women. There's just no women around. So I love to dance. So I said, oh, sure, I'd like to go. And several of the others did. And they came to pick us up at our barracks the next evening. So we met them outside. And I was one of the last ones out because I'd been over to the PX. When I stepped out on the little veranda there that goes, has steps down from the barracks, a fellow grabbed my arm and said, oh, I'll take this one. I think he'd been drinking something stronger than water. So I didn't think I wanted to do that. So a tall, dark, and handsome young man grabbed this arm and said, oh, no, I'll take this one. And I kind of leaned his way because I liked his looks a lot better.
Uh-huh. And I guess he liked you a little bit, too, because he said a few things to you that night.
He did. Said he loved me that night. And I laughed at him because I said, well, that's impossible. You just barely met me. How do you know? Oh, I can tell, he said. I can tell.
And he told you he was going to marry you someday?
Mm-hmm.
And you thought that was just insane?
Mm-hmm. I didn't believe it at all.
What was his name?
Walter Morrison. He was from Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. Did you see him again before you went overseas?
Yes. I think we were there in Camp Bowie about a month or 6 weeks. See, we had to learn how to live in tents. We lived in tents all the time. Our hospital unit was in tents.
Yeah, even during the Battle of the Bulge and the worst winter Europe ever saw, you're living in tents.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
But we had a little heater inside the tent, and that helped a little.
So when you get on that train and you head east and you end up in New York and you're heading overseas, did you think at all about this guy, Walter? Did you think you're ever going to see him again?
I really didn't know because I did, like I say, I don't know where I was going.
Sure.
Or with whom. And he thought he was fixing to go too.
Yeah.
But I went first. He didn't know he could have gone to the Pacific, but we both ended up in Europe.
Yeah. So what about heading overseas? Here's this young single girl from Georgia, and she's getting on a big ship with a whole bunch of people.
Right.
And heading across the Atlantic Ocean. What was going through your mind?
Well, I thought, boy, this is a really new experience. I never dreamed I'd have such an experience. But it was nice. The boys all on the ship were very nice to us. We were on there 6 days from New York to Scotland. We landed in Greenock,
mm-hmm.
Scotland, far out. Queen Elizabeth was our ship, and that was the biggest one in the world at that time. And what was going through my mind was, you know, what an experience. A little old nurse from North Georgia, I never dreamed I'd have such an experience.
Did it occur to you at all that your life might be in danger?
Oh, yes. I wasn't fearful. I did jump a lot when the big guns went off, and our tent would go, you know, the roof of it.
Yeah.
And you'd just declare it was going to go off, but it never did.
Mm.
No, I didn't worry about that at all because I knew we were going to win the war.
How'd you know that?
Because we were a Christian nation, and I knew that God had a plan, and we were going to win the war.
It's time for our first commercial break, but when we come back, we'll find out what that 21-year-old nurse encountered on the front lines in Europe, not to mention the horrific things she witnessed at a liberated concentration camp. You can find photos of Leela then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country, and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everts RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and three locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everts RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.